We continue now with our Federal Drive series, Citizen Science at the EPA. For citizens to be able to gather and report accurate data about air, they need reliable and accurate devices. Ron Williams is an EPA research chemist. He spends a lot of time evaluating devices and helping develop new ones to help that cause of citizen science.
There's a number of issues that we have discovered since 2012 when we really started to spend time in this area. The first is the fact that many individuals, including citizen scientists, don't have a good understanding of the technologies that are available. We would call that market discovery. That is, there's just a lack of information about what devices are available and what they can do. And the second and tandem to that is that while a device may be discoverable, that is, it may exist, it may be on the market, it may be available, how well that device performs is unknown. Often it's unknown not just to the citizen scientist, but it's also unknown to the professional scientist.
These are devices for what purpose?
Air quality sensors are used to take an understanding, typically in a short time, 1 second, 1 minute, 5 minute readings of air quality. In many cases, they're associated with pollutants that we are familiar with, those associated with our regulatory standards like nitrogen dioxide, ozone, carbon monoxide, and PM2.5, fine particulate matter, to name a few.
And how big are these things? Are they like something the size of a bread box? Is it a cigarette package? I mean, what are we talking about in terms of a device that would be put in people's hands?
Well, that's a great question. It's not unusual to find those that are the size of a deck of playing cards. It's not unusual to find those that are the size of a roll of quarters that have the ability to go there and get at least an estimate of air quality. So the vast majority of them easily will fit into the palm of your hand.
And these are battery-operated, I presume, and they have an IP address, some sort of a radio communication capability?
We see a wide range in what we might call the telecommunications or the data portal for these types of sensors. Many of them have the ability to use local Wi-Fi or a cellular system. Many of them have the ability to go there and record data internally. And that's an important consideration because when citizens and others are trying to decide which device they may want to use, they have to be aware that for many of these devices, they actually have to purchase a cell phone coverage or they have to be close to that Wi-Fi hotspot for data to actually be uploaded in any fast and efficient means. And so that's a consideration that one has to take into account. How do you plan to get the data from the device to some portal which you might be able to see it? And you can't always depend upon cellular coverage or even Wi-Fi. And so one has to understand where you are, how you're collecting data, and how that data is going to be transmitted.
I guess sometimes you might have to leave the device in a place for a given period of time, so you wouldn't want to leave your cell phone there, but you would take it back to and hook it up somewhere to a computer or something and then transmit the data later on.
That's absolutely correct. In many cases, these devices have the ability to store data internally for short periods of time, and then when one goes into an area where there's Wi-Fi coverage or a cellular system, the ability for the device will go there to upload occurs. And so many of the sensor developers have tried to provide that means for end users. One of the things to keep in mind regarding that, just when you think about using these devices in remote locations, most of us understand that our cell phones may last 12 hours or 24 hours. And a lot of these sensors are depending upon lithium-ion technology, and they in turn typically last well under 24 hours. And so you have to understand that these are not long-term devices. You can't put them out for days upon end unless you're providing an alternative energy supply.
And is each device only capable of sensing one particular type of material or chemical or pollutant?
The vast majority are singular pollutants. Again, typically around one of our regulatory air quality measurements like nitrogen dioxide or ozone. But there are systems that we would call PODs, P-O-D-S, just for an acronym, being that there's multi-pollutant sensors that have been embedded into those devices. And so you see a wide range of capability and, of course, a wide range in cost of those devices. Typically, the singular devices are less expensive, with pod systems being significantly more expensive because of the base technology having to be integrated.
And expensive in terms of how many dollars? Give us an order of magnitude, say $10, $100, $1,000?
Yeah, it's not unusual to find a single sensor at what we might call the citizen science level of marketability at the $100 to $300 level for nitrogen dioxide or carbon monoxide. We typically see devices that are multi-pollutant ranging anywhere from 1,500 to 5,000 to 10,000. And so there's a wide range in cost. Again, the vast majority of singular pollutants are typically under $1,500.
We're speaking with Ron Williams. He's a research chemist in the Air Climate Energy Research Program at the EPA. Tell us how you're getting these devices into the hands of citizens that can do measurement on behalf of the EPA. What's the mechanism by which they get them and the data gets to you?
Well, that's a great question. The first and foremost mean is education. We would call that knowledge transfer. And so we're often using a portal that we have, which is the Air Sensors Toolbox. If one simply does a search for that, internet search, you'll find it. It's number one on the hit parade, and it gets a huge number of hits every single week of people trying to find, again, market releasable, commercially available sensors. And so the Air Sensors Toolbox, we're providing discovery. We're informing people via that toolbox website of the sensors that we are evaluating and how well they perform under known conditions. We also typically try to provide information on what we might call usability features. How long does the battery last? How well do they work? Do they need a Wi-Fi environment? Do they need a particular cell phone plan to work? And so we often use the Air Sensors Toolbox as a means to share information with the general public and sensor developers and regulatory officials, because there's a wide range of stakeholders who are interested in this, and it's not just the citizen scientists. It's also professionals who are interested in the same subject matter.
But are you deploying fleets of these in the hands of citizens for purposes that the EPA has, that is to find out, you know, pollution of a certain type in a given area?
We've had an opportunity to perform pilot studies, and in fact, recently we completed a pilot study effort in the New York, New Jersey area, working with one of our regional EPA offices, where we actually developed one of our own sensor packages. We assembled the technology and developed all of the quality assurance and then released it to our regional partners, who in turn released it to citizen scientists, and they operated the devices for almost a half a calendar year, totally on their own, collecting data, which then we collectively, that is the citizen scientists and EPA, actually had an opportunity to go there and review and analyze and summarize as a pilot effort, and it was quite successful. Citizens, given the proper tools, given the education of how to operate some of these emerging technologies, are fully capable of collecting their own data for their own uses. The key is the data quality assurance. How good is the data, and what is it applicable for trying to understand?
And what are some of the use cases that you have found people are using them for?
Wide range of application. One is environmental awareness. If you ask most citizens, what am I being exposed to on a daily basis, the vast majority cannot tell you, because they're not aware of the fact that they're constantly being exposed to nitrogen dioxide and ozone and fine particulate matter that we're all exposed just in terms of our everyday life. And so environmental awareness is a key feature just in informing the public about what they're exposed and their time activity patterns and their own exposure patterns. Likewise, environmental awareness at the community level, because many communities have issues where they in turn are interested in particular areas, but they have not had the tools to be able to collect their own data for informing community groups and others about the general environmental situation that is in their community.
And in looking at these devices and loading them into the toolbox with the information that people might need, do you also verify the accuracy of them? Because I imagine if they're giving wrong readings relative to, say, a really high-grade instrument, then that could produce problems of its own.
That is such an important feature, because we work very closely with communities, and we share with them the fact that if they obtain data and the data is of not great quality, it will be frustrating for them, and it will be frustrating for those who they try to work with, that is, municipality, air quality boards, and other institutions. Bad data is bad data. So data quality is extremely important, and there's no easy way to get around that. One has to do the hard work. We often tell citizen scientists, you may not be a professional scientist, but you have to think like a professional scientist in terms of data quality. What are the important features that you need to understand about your data and your instrument, the device that you're using, so that at the end of the day, you have data that you can share with others and be taken seriously, that are useful for you for whatever your purpose may be?
Are there techniques also for deploying the devices that might make a difference? If you're measuring XYZ, does it matter, for example, if the thing is laying on the ground or it's 10 feet in the air, if it's in the breeze, if it's shaded from the breeze, that kind of thing?
You're absolutely correct. Siting is very important. On the regulatory side, when we're taking air quality in communities or states and local air qualities, they have to put monitors at certain heights. They have to use certain mechanisms by which they collect data. Of course, that's not true for citizen scientists. There are no regulatory features that they have to meet. That being said, if I'm interested in a particular air quality feature of my community, I have to be aware of the fact that many things may influence that outcome. If I'm interested in a general understanding of my environment, if I happen to put it very, very close to a busy intersection, if I happen to put it close to some source that's providing a pollutant that is really providing some understanding of that environment that really has nothing to do with the general overall environment, I've really kind of contaminated my monitoring mechanism. So understanding where you're placing the sensors and how they're operating is very important.
And a final question, where do you obtain these things? Do they sell them in Best Buy or places like that, or how do you get your hands on one?
Well, you can buy them via, internet shops, but we would encourage people to go there and work directly with manufacturers, because just as one is making an informed decision about any commercial product, you would hope that your manufacturer has some understanding of the data quality that the device can provide. And so just looking at an output on an internet search may not be the most advisable way to go there and purchase one of these devices. Spend some time with the manufacturer. See if there's information out there, either on the Air Sensors Toolbox or some of the other groups that are also doing sensor evaluations, and gain an understanding. Is this device going to meet your end need?
Tell us about the Village Green Project, what that is, and how that ties into this deployment or knowledge on the part of citizens of these sensor technologies.
Now, the Village Green is another opportunity for those of us here in the EPA to look at advanced and emerging technologies. And in fact, the Village Green represents a sustainable air quality platform, totally powered by the sun, that is streaming data to communities on a real-time basis. And currently we have Village Green air quality monitoring stations at the National Zoo in Washington, the Historic Mall in Philadelphia, a Children's Museum in Hartford, Connecticut, public libraries in Durham, North Carolina, and Kansas City, a botanical garden in Oklahoma City, and others to be established this calendar year. And again, one can think about collecting their own data, but the Village Green is actually providing data to communities in real time using some of these advanced technologies, which is there for educational use and for other activities. Again, using emerging technologies being provided to the citizens gives us an opportunity to test new platforms and some of these advanced technologies that are just coming onto the market.
Ron Williams is a research chemist at the Environmental Protection Agency. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. We'll conclude the series, Citizen Science at the EPA, tomorrow when we hear from Pat Sheridan, EPA's Citizen Science Coordinator for Region 2, and Marie O'Shea from EPA's Office of Research and Development.